The hour of 4:30 being here, we're called the meeting of the Local Government Division to order. And we're going to start out here. We're going to change the agenda. We've got two things on the agenda today, and one being House File 530, which should be a short bill, and then an overview by the Sports Facility Commission. And so we can get things out of the way, we'll do the House File 530 first. So we're going to hand the chair over to Vice Chair Turner.
Okay, we're going to be doing 5:30 here. Representative Nelson, would you like to move your bill today?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 530 to be moved to the floor.
Okay, so moved.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative,
thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman,
no,
I'm wondering if the... And I think I just heard an amendment to the motion, Mr. Chair. I don't believe that it's within the purview of this committee to move bills directly to the floor.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Representative. You're extremely correct on that. So thanks for sharing that. And Representative Nelson, it sounds like the government operations to move the bill from this committee would be...
I guess that's the right place to move it. Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks. So would you like to share your thoughts on the bill, Representative Nelson?
Well, first I have an oral amendment, and I'll explain the bill. On page 2, line 4, the oral amendment is to move the 60 days to 90 days. Delete the 6 and replace it with the 9.
Does anybody have any comments or questions on that?
And if you want to explain that, my understanding is that in discussions with the local governments that some of them don't meet often enough, that the 60 days would be trouble for them, 90 days they were more comfortable with.
Okay. Representative Kalin?
Mr. Chair or staff or Chair Nelson, wondering, Representative Bissons, and I just want to make sure. I believe we should vote on that amendment, and then
yes,
looking to.
Okay. So, any other questions on that oral amendment? Okay. All those in favor of the amendment to go from 60 days to 90 days, say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. Motion carries.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll
and the amendment is adopted.
And Mr. Chair, can I explain the bill?
Okay, thank you, Representative Nelson.
Basically, the bill was brought to me by the Met Council, and I have Judge Shetman here with the Met Council, and he'll explain the bill. It's basically just creating the water management plan along with the land development plan, and I'll let Judge explain the bill.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Judd Shetland. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today and appreciate Representative Nelson agreeing to carry the bill. This is a fairly simple bill. We try to accomplish two things with this legislation. The first, I'll speak to the amendment. What we're trying to do is shorten the time frame for adjacent reviews by cities of comp plan. There was originally a date of 180 days or 6 months for cities to review comp plans. That goes back to when the Land Planning Act was originally put together. The cities don't need that much time. The council gets slowed down by having that 180-day review period. And since now we've been through the comp planning process a few times, we agreed that that time frame could be shortened. So we had originally thought 60 days. The cities came back and said they have absolutely no problem with the bill if we would go to 90 days. So I appreciate you adopting the amendment for that. The second part of the bill deals with our water management plan, and what it does is that when a city submits a plan to a watershed district, all we're asking for is that they notify us of those changes to their water management plan so that what we have in our comp plan basically fits what they have in the watershed district. We believe this is a very simple bill and appreciate your support.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Sharp. Any questions? No. Representative Diskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple. First of all, to Representative Nelson. Representative, in this time of budget considerations, in this time when our local units of government are looking at potential loss in local government aid, and for our counties which serve as the the conduit for water management issues, is the 90 days still appropriate given the potential and most likely real reduction in staffing that our local governments will be experiencing? Have you considered that the reduction and the shortening of the time frame would actually add more stress onto our local governments than they're currently going to experience with current law and the reductions that's sure to come in local government funding?
Representative Nelson and Mr. Shetland?
I'll let Mr. Shetland answer that. But I'll say I spoke with the representatives from local governments, from the townships, from the AMC, and they all basically told me that they're okay with the bill at 90 days and they don't see it as a burden to them.
And Mr. Chair and members and Representative Biskin, I don't think that this will be an additional burden because either way, the cities who are reviewing these plans for the adjacent cities will do it one way or the other. And again, we talked to the folks at AMM and League of Minnesota Cities, and they're perfectly fine with this. We're not adding a burden. What we're asking to do is just shorten the time frame so we can process these quicker.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And between, if this bill does move to state gov, which I am, of course, a member of, I will have a chance to talk to my local governments that I represent. While I understand that you're not adding a new task, with any task, when you shorten the time frame to get a task completed, I would argue that it can become a new burden simply because they prioritize all of the mandates that we put before them. I understand we're not creating a new mandate. However, we are now telling them, at least in this mandate, you have to move it up in your priority schedule, and that's going to make a difference. Mr. Chair, I've got one final question, if I may.
Sure.
To Mr. Shetland. Mr. Shetland, is watershed management a system, or are we experiencing now a further mission creep by the Metropolitan Council?
Mr. Shetland?
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, I don't believe that this is mission creep at all. What we're asking is just that when cities submit their water plans to their watershed districts, that they also have the ability to send them to us as well. And all we're asking is that when they make changes to their water plans, that they submit them to us so that they just match, so that we have matching plans. All we're trying to do here is streamline and get some efficiency here. We don't treat water as a system. We just view it as a regional issue, and we have no ability to have any authority over cities or watershed districts to changing their water plans since it is not a system, but we're just trying to make sure that the comp plans match the watershed district's plans.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that brings up one final point, and I apologize because last time I said one final point, but just to get on the record, then Mr. Chair and Mr. Shetman, is it your testimony here before the committee that the Metropolitan Council would have no veto authority over a local unit's local water management plan or their plan amendment, even if they quote unquote did not line up? Or is it the intent of the Metropolitan Council to have said veto authority because to adjacent territories, to adjacent municipalities may have watershed management plans that are in conflict with each other.
Mr. Shetland?
Mr. Chair, Representative, this is absolutely fair point, and the council does not have the authority to veto anything regarding water because it is not a system.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in this discussion, I don't want us to lose sight as to why this is coming before us. And Mr. Shetland or Chair Nelson, you can comment. We do have looming problems with water supply, and particularly some of the growing areas of our region. And this, I mean, if I had my druthers, it would be a system, but it's not. But we really do have to do water planning because we could potentially face some shortages, and the Met Council studying this issue. And so this is really important, and it's forward-looking so that we really can get a grasp on our water supply and future needs. So I understand my understanding that's why this bill is before us, and I think it deserves our support for that reason.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Representative Kalin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Nelson, Mr. Shetland. I've been trying to track down an answer to this question. Representative Biskins talked about mission creep. I'm going to actually talk about geographic creep. last year, the Comfort Lake Forest Lake Watershed District that shares a boundary from, or is one-third in Washington County and two-thirds in Chisago County, was reclassified from a Greater Minnesota 103D Watershed Management District to a Watershed Management Organization under 103B, of which the first section of your bill pertains to. And so a question for Mr. Shetland or Ms. Dyson. The Chisago County portion of the Comfort Lake Forest Lake Watershed District, will we now have that WMO that represents two-thirds outside the Metropolitan Council's territory having to then report in any way to the Metropolitan Council?
Mr. Shetland?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, the council has no authority over any of the activities that happen in Chisago County. So my understanding is that this would only apply in the metro area, and the areas that we have through the Land Planning Act are identified as those areas within the seven-county metro area. Now, I also am smart enough to know that Ms. Dyson knows a lot more about this than I do, but I think that if she wants to take a shot at it, but I think it's safe to say the council's roles and responsibilities in our geographic area that we have any type of responsibility over ends at those county lines.
Thank you, Mr. Shetland. Ms. Dyson, would you like to add to that discussion?
Mr. Chair and Representative Kalin, no. I have a vague recollection of the special law for that district last year, and my understanding then was it was to take something that was crossing the borderline between what can be a watershed district and what was a watershed management organization to give it authority to be one, the watershed management organization. I don't recall anything having to do with then how it relates to the Met Council, and as Mr. Shetland said, the council's jurisdiction is with regard to the Seven County metro area, but because it's now a watershed management organization, which are organizations within the Seven County metro area, as I understand it, maybe it does involve a submittal of their plan to the council, but I can't say that for sure, and I can certainly look into it.
Thank you, Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Kalin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Nelson, would you be willing to work with me to just find an amendment that clarifies that so that the city of Wyoming and the new greater city of Wyoming and the township surrounding are not having to report to the Metropolitan Council? Would be really important to me.
Representative Nelson?
I would work with you, but as I'm being assured here that they have no authority, and it's just basically reporting the plan is along with the county's, Washington County's land use plan, so that they're together and they're in one place, and like it's a streamlined government, and when they're looking and trying to set their plan.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Kalin, we're happy to do that. That is not the intention of this. I am very aware of Representative Biskin's concerns about the council and mission creep, and and we try to make sure that we have that in mind when we come forward with our bills, and I don't think that we are moving on any of that. But I appreciate your question, and I'm happy to make sure that, we straighten that out, because that, is not the intention of this, is to create any type of mission concern.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Scalzi?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Shetman, I share Representative Biskin's concern about mission creep here, and I'm wondering, is this sort of like moving toward a super watershed district?
Mr. Chair, Representative Scalzi, not at all. That has nothing to do with it. It's just making sure that the watershed plans that the cities submit to the watershed are the same plans that are submitted when we look at our comprehensive plans. There is no intention there. I think that if we were trying to do that, we'd have the watersheds all over us here if we were intending on trying to make any changes to watersheds or create a large watershed district. That is absolutely not the case. It's just making sure that they fit together, that we don't have conflicting water plans from cities, one for the watershed district and one with their long-range plan is for the city and how water would be used.
Representative Halsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chetman, so when you say making sure that they don't conflict, that sounds to me like you have a little bit of authority there, if you can make sure that they don't conflict. I just don't know what that means, and I don't know how this would dovetail with Bowser. I don't know. Maybe I missed that in the discussion here. So there's two questions there. What do you mean by making sure that they don't conflict? And the other one is, what has Bowser stated in relationship to this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Scalzi, Bowser hasn't weighed in on this at all. I haven't talked to them. We haven't heard from Bowser. As far as how they don't conflict, as Representative Hornstein mentioned earlier, the council is doing work on the drinking water advisory group, the drinking water study, making sure that we see how water is being used throughout the regions. We've got the Prairie du Chien watershed. We've got other watersheds up in the and the northern part of the metro area that extend beyond the metropolitan area. And all we're trying to do is make sure that there is an eye toward how one area uses water versus another area. And there is the council has no authority over any of this other than we're just trying to track how water is being used. We don't have any ability to veto anything, but what happens is that the cities have to submit a water plan to their watershed district, and all we're asking for in this bill is that when they make a change in the water plans to the watershed district, that they just let us know, because we're just keeping that information. We have no authority over anything.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Shetman, though, there's more of a change, though, than that. It's changing the 6 months to 90 to 60 days and now to 90 days. So there is a change there, and it just sounds to me like it's a faster time period. Of course, it is, from 180 days to 90 days. And Bowser is the primary state agency that's our agency to talk about watershed districts. And the watershed districts report to the county commissioners. It just sounds to me like we're getting one other agency in here, and I've been trying to chart this watershed problem for a couple of years now. And frankly, I don't want to put another box in there that this is going to have to go to somebody else, that it's going to have some other authority. And typically, you know, a bill like this, you know, anytime you see a must in there or something like that or shell, I think, well, this is kind of the start. This is what it looks like to me. So I just don't know why we would want to muck up something that's, in my estimation, I could be wrong, is the responsibility of Bowser.
Mr. Shetman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Scalzi, speaking to the 60-day rule, that applies to, we changed that to 90 days in the amendment that Representative Nelson moved earlier, and that applies to the comprehensive plan. And water is not a element of the council's comprehensive plan. So that is unrelated to what we're doing with the water plans. All we are asking, and I don't know how to say this in a simpler way, but I'd be happy to come visit with you again here at before the bill is moved in government operations, just to explain how what we're doing is just being asked to be notified when a city submits changes to their water plans to the watershed district. We're just asking to be notified, because what we're doing here is trying to do a regional study that the legislature asked us to move forward with a couple years ago, and we're trying to keep an eye on how water is being used in the metropolitan area. That's all we're doing. We have no ability to veto, to go back and ask cities to change their plans. All we're asking is for them to submit to us the same copy of their watershed plan, and if they make any changes to that time and the time period they have set in order to make their water uses to the watershed district. We just want to be informed. That's basically all we're doing. Like I said before, we're very careful about what people may think is mission creep for the council, and I don't believe this is the case at all. And plus, I also wanted to let you know that we've had this conversation with the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities and also with the League of Minnesota Cities, and they believe, as I do, that this is just basically an information gathering and a streamlining bill, especially for the 60 to 90 day review of the adjacent cities. And then the watershed piece is just informing us of any changes that are made to that city's plan to the watershed management organization, and we're just asking to be notified.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to members who live outside of the auspices of the Metropolitan Council, if it looks like the members who are under their umbrella are as skittish as, you know, rabbits in a field of coyotes, it's because we've been there, done that. You know, Mr. Shetland, you know, and maybe it was just an unfortunate use of words, but the word you clearly used in your testimony was to ensure consistency among water use plans. Now, the question that arises in my mind is, let's say that a water use plan is submitted that is not entirely consistent with a local unit of government's neighbor. What do you envision the Metropolitan Council doing with that information?
Mr. Shetland or Representative Nelson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Viskin, I know you're asking me to speculate here, and I'm willing to say that the council has no authority over anything that has to do with that water plan. As I mentioned to Representative Scalzi, we're just interested when a city submits its plan to its watershed district to be notified of any changes that happen in that plan. And it's safe to say the council has no authority to ask for any change or to have any comment on that. Yeah. And Representative Sterner, Mr. Chair, I am concerned that the committee believes that this section of the bill is extending beyond what our authorities lie. And if the committee has questions or concerns about it, we can certainly take this section out of the bill and try to come back with it, and I'll try to satisfy Representative Biskin and Representative Scalzi's concerns about this and the other members and come back with it, because I don't want to move forward with the piece of legislation that people are uneasy with. Again, I think that this is just a review type portion of the bill and just a request to be kept informed of what other cities' requirements are as far as water. And if you want to take the section out of the bill, that's perfectly fine, and I can come back and try to work on this. I can be honest, I didn't anticipate that there were going to be these issues, but I can appreciate the council in their concerns. So if you want to take that out, that's perfectly fine with me.
Well, thank you, Mr. Shetland. Well, let's just take a couple more questions from some of the representatives, and maybe Representative Nelson might have, you know, we can get to that point afterwards. But Representative Eastland?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess what I'm hearing is what I want to hear, is that we need some more consideration of this. And, what's in the bill that I really draws me to the concern, similar concern is on page 2. Or page 2, line 2.20, 2.1 and 2.2, where it says the line that says the current local water management plan is a plan that is consistent with the most recently adopted watershed management plan, and that has been reviewed by the council and approved by the watershed management organization required by section. And I don't know what 103B.235 is, but maybe you could comment on that. But I mean, the point is that you're by definition saying that they can't even have a plan unless it is reviewed by the council. And reviewed is very different, in my view, than notifying or sending me a copy of or whatever. I mean, they can't adopt the plan until the council has reviewed it and said and given them the okay that we've reviewed this thing. So there is a certain amount of inherent control that the council is getting in this language, and I think that's where my concern lies as well. What you're saying is that there is no intent, and I guess what I'm saying is then we should make sure that the language clearly, you know, communicates that, because I think there is some gray area in the language in here that would make us rethink that maybe technically there's not any control, but yet there seems to be a lot of clout that's placed in this review by the council. If it's a review, that's one thing. If it's just a notice, that's something else.
Okay. Mr. Shetland or Representative Nelson?
Mr. Chair and Representative Eastland, that I agree with you. And I think that needs to be straightened out here. As I mentioned, I think maybe we need to come back with this. I'm looking for our wastewater water guy, and he's not here. So that's why, and I don't want to go out wading a little bit further away from the beach than I wanted to. So before we go any further, I think that maybe we should come back and talk.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Sutton. Let's just lay the bill over for a future meeting. Representative Lanning?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Even if we're laying this over, I'd like to make a couple of comments about this. First of all, I don't have any problem with notification, but when you add the word review, that has all kinds of other connotations here. And it seems to me that it's very appropriate and a part of the mission of Metropolitan Council to deal with wastewater issues. But when you're dealing with surface groundwater, water supply issues, that is best left to the professionals, the people who are in the water management business, not only Bowser, but watersheds and water management organizations. I'm working on a bill that would enable first on a basin level, not on a watershed, but on a basin level to address these issues, where you have the people who are in the water business making decisions with regard to that. And it seems to me that it's right that we ought to raise some cautions here about the Metropolitan Council getting into an arena that really ought to be left to others. Water does not follow county lines. Water does not follow Metropolitan Council lines. And therefore, you ought to be dealing with water issues on a watershed and basin level by the folks who are in the business of handling water in that way. And so I'm glad to hear that you're willing to pull back on this. And please carry back a message here that I don't think Met Council should get into watershed management issues here. That's not appropriate.
Mr. Chair, we'll pull the bill for now and lay it over, and we will work on this. This was brought to me by the governor's office and through the Met Council as their agency bill, and we weren't aware that there was this much controversy about it. The local cities and the city, the local government organizations have all said they're fine with the bill. So we'll work on it and we'll try and get the things done and go from there.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Mr. Hartman, thanks for your time today.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, again, you know, it is not my intention to be before the committee and not be able to provide you the specific answers that you're looking for. And comments to Representative Lanning's comments is that the council would never do that. And I, more than probably anybody at the Met Council, outside of our chairman and regional administrator, Peter Bell and Tom Weaver, are extremely concerned about the council and the idea of mission creep and different types of activities that the council does and how the legislature will view those bills. And so I did want to have to plead for this bill to be laid over, but I appreciate you doing that because it seems like we need to do that. So thank you very much for your input.
Thank you.
Okay. Now the second part.
We have the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission in front of us, and with their presentation of the overview of their committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Roy Terwilliger, and I'm chair of the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission. It's nice to see longtime friends and to get the opportunity to visit with you today. With me on my right is Bill Lester, who is the executive director of the commission and the person who is comes with a great deal of expertise in stadium management and such. With us in the audience also are some other members of the commission. Vice Chair Luann Thrain is here. Mr. Paul Thatcher is here. Mr. Peggy Lucas is here out of the seven-person commission. You know, it's really refreshing to be able to come and be the less controversial part with the stadium of a presentation that dealt with water and the direction it flows. So we're pleased to have this opportunity. Actually, our time today is intended to be an overview, to bring up to date, you the policymakers up to date, as to just what has taken place with the commission, the Metrodome, and such, since perhaps you have been made aware of this the last time. The Metrodome was constructed and has been in operation since 1982. This spring marks its 27th anniversary. Over 80 million people have visited there. It's hosted over 300 event days a year. It's the only facility in the world that has hosted two World Series, two Final Fours, a Super Bowl, and over 300 event days a year all these particular years. So we have had great success, everything from tractor pulls to the Hmong New Year to many, many different venues such as the high school league and their prep football playoffs and the soccer playoffs, etc. So it has hosted concerts, very notable people such as Billy Graham, and so has been a wonderful investment for this community. The legislation that established the Sports Commission was passed in 1977. It was at that time a site-neutral bill, and it had the support for any future funding they were going to have of a metro-wide liquor tax. That changed as the legislation moved through the process over here, and the site was selected, the site being Minneapolis, and the legislation was amended in 79, and on which site, of course, the $55 million worth of bonds were sold to construct what we now have known for years affectionately as the Metrodome. There was a private development corporation that assisted in acquiring the property. And so we have had great success with Geo over the 27 years that the facility has been in existence. The I'm going to not go to all of the various slides here. I will mention here that under the current arrangement, six of the seven members of the commission are appointed by the City Council of Minneapolis. The chair being the lone exception, he's appointed, or the chair is appointed by the governor, he or she. And the we are, I'm working with the slide here, the slide up there, and the person behind my back here, so I'm we're concerned to preserving professional sports in Minnesota. The statute requires the promotion and retention of professional baseball and football in Minnesota. And over the years, where we've had these three teams of the Twins, the Vikings, and the Gophers, we have worked very closely with these teams to make certain that we do what is best in the public interest to make certain that we have a well-run facility. The legislature, as you know, in 2006, I believe it was, passed the legislation that would give the new homes for the Twins after the 2009 season beginning in 2010, now known as Target Field. And the Gophers, after this last fall, now will be opening this fall in the TCF Bank Stadium on the University of Minnesota campus. The football use agreement for the Vikings expires after the 2011 season. So there are 30 games left on the schedule for the Vikings under the current youth agreement. And we recognize, the commission certainly recognizes, like all of us do in Minnesota, the seriousness of the economic challenges, not only here in Minnesota, but across the country and the world that are faced. At the same time, we want to call your attention to the fact that this time frame is such that we have three more years on the youth agreement. We need to be aware of that. We need to work together to determine a long-term solution that's in the interest of the state of Minnesota and people throughout the upper Midwest to be able to retain the Minnesota Vikings in this particular facility. The team wants to maintain its home in downtown Minneapolis. The Metrodome offers a significant public infrastructure investment to date, and with the upcoming central corridor of the light rail coming across to join the Hiawatha line, along with the North Star corridor coming down from the north by the Target Field and coming over, as well as the two interstates that intersect near the Metrodome, we have certainly a good opportunity to continue to use that facility in the most effective way. The Metrodome, as I mentioned, has been a great investment for the state of Minnesota. The public investment in the Metrodome to date is $33.4 million, and the incremental tax revenues generated by professional sports at the Metrodome are $245.6 million, $234 million alone to the state. I might just move back here for a second to repeat something. There are no state dollars that went into the Metrodome, into its construction, but the state has received back $234 out of the $245 million. The city of Minneapolis put in approximately $11 million for infrastructure of roads, et cetera, around the area, and they have received back approximately $11 million from the operation of the Metrodome in that site. The commission began planning efforts here some time ago as an ongoing effort to, as a landlord, find a way to look at what we should do for the next generation of facilities. And we have had in the last year the listening tour, which took place.
Mr. Williger, yes. We have a question.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I look for you for direction, Mr. Chair. Is it your preference to wait until the entire presentation is over and then ask questions, or Would you prefer asking questions as they arise?
Why don't we let them get through their presentation? Your questions might get answered, and then...
We won't be much longer, Mr. Bipkins, and we'll get to the opportunity for questions. We have a listening tour in the November to 2007 to January 2008 period of time. We visited 9 cities, had over 17 different presentations and meetings with various people, leaders, community leaders, and people from throughout the area. The conclusions were overwhelmingly positive. The planning process and the discussion then has led us to solicitation of proposals to assess the true cost of a reconstructed stadium and its potential impact. The past fall, we engaged the planning firm to examine the potential future uses of the Metrodome. That was a little bit earlier than that. And then last fall, we engaged an architect to develop a conceptual design for us, HKS Architect out of Dallas. They are currently doing the Dallas Cowboys Stadium, and prior to that, they completed the Indianapolis Colts Stadium in Indianapolis. We, along with them, retained the assistance of a cost estimator to develop the solid costing information, M.A. Mortensen Company. You will recognize that name as a company that's currently constructing the TCF Bank Stadium as well as Target Field. And then we also engaged a consulting firm to develop a jobs and direct impact study, and that is the name of the Convention Sports and Leisure Company headquartered here in Minneapolis called CSL. We've been working with the Vikings to prepare this schedule and a proposal, and certainly we intend to be working with all stakeholders involved, the legislature, governor, business and labor leaders, general public. And when we complete all the information that we will have assembled later on this spring, we will be reporting back in the process. What we would like to do at this point, I believe, is to bring with us up to the table here Mr. Bill Rota from CSL Sports, CS Convention Sports and Leisure, and he can proceed to talk about the study that we just is about to announce today.
Go ahead, Mr. Rota.
As Roy mentioned, my name is Bill Rota. I'm the principal of CSL International, which is headquartered here in Minneapolis. And we were retained by the Sports Commission to take a look at the economic and fiscal impact related to the development and the operations of a new state-of-the-art Metrodome. And if you look at the areas of focus that we looked at for this project, it really breaks down into five categories. Direct spending, which is the initial round of spending, which is the spending related to the fans, it's the people who buy the tickets, the concession, the merchandise, the premium seating. That's on page 23 if you're flipping through. You can see we skipped a couple slides.
Mm-hmm.
The direct spending then filters throughout the economy, which has indirect and induced rounds of spending, generating what we call total output. This represents the total economic activity that's generated as a result of the project, both the construction and the annual operations of the new stadium. The personal earnings, which is the wages and salaries earned as a direct and indirect result of the economic activity. Employment represents the full and part-time jobs from the project. And then the fiscal impacts, which are the taxes related to the state and the local municipalities. All of those are the areas that we have developed estimates of impact for this project. So, breaking it down again, if you look at the first round of spending, you can see in the top box is what we call the gross project spending. And this is really broken up into two categories. One is the one-time impact, which is the construction period. That would take place usually over about a three-year period. And then there's the annual spending that takes place as a result of the direct operations of both the tenants and the facility itself. So as you can see, as it relates to the construction, you have the materials, the supplies, the labors, the professional fees. That's the one-time impact that you would see as it relates to the development or the construction of the new venue. Once the building's up and running, then the types of impacts that are impacting the local economy, the state, are when people buy tickets, the rent of the teams, the concessions, merchandise, is the spending that takes place before and after home games, as well as other events that are held at the stadium. All of that then flows through to the economy. What we do is we make adjustments to that direct spending. We make adjustments both from the standpoint that if you take a look at a professional sports team economic makeup, everybody understands that a very large portion of that spending goes to players. And not all those players reside in Minnesota full-time, or they don't spend that entire allocation of money. So we make an adjustment to that. And we also make an adjustment to the unique nature of professional sports franchise, where they have specific line items that aren't impacting the local economy. The same could be true for the Metrodome. So if a major concert, well, let's just say it was the Rolling Stones, were to come here, we understand that about 95% of that ticket revenue, which is spent here, actually leaves with the promoter and leaves with the agent. So we've made those adjustments to this economic impact model. And then we've also made adjustments to account for the uniqueness of displacement spending, what people would do if these types of things weren't here. So we've come up with what we call an adjusted direct spending. Do it together. So we're going to look at the first set of economic impact numbers, and this is really the construction period impact. This occurs one time, and it's usually over a 2 to 3 year construction period. You can see here, as you'll see in the detailed report, the estimated total project cost is about $954 million. Of that, about $734 million is estimated to impact the state economy. From that $734 million, it will generate a total economic activity of $1.4 billion, personal earnings of $577 million, employment of 13,400 full and part-time jobs. Once again, this is over a 2 to 3 year time period. From a tax standpoint, the construction of a venue will have an impact of about $21 million in income taxes and about $12 million in indirect sales tax. What we've done is we've made the assumption that the direct purchase of materials has not been taxable, given it could be sponsored by the government. So total tax revenue would be $33 million as it relates to the construction of the venue. On an ongoing annual basis, you can see here that the gross initial direct spending is $339 million. This is year one revenue. This relates to all the events that occur at the Dome, as well as the full-time operations of the Vikings. We make our adjustments to account for the unique nature of the player spending, also for the expenses that we assume do not impact the local economy, and it's a $194 million adjustment down to $145 million. So we take the first level of spending, which is $339, and we adjust it all the way down to $145 million. That generates about $3.7 billion of direct spending over a 30-year time period, present value to today's dollars at 5%. That generates, in terms of year one total economic activity, $275 million, $106 million of personal earnings, and 3,400 full and part-time jobs. If you look at that from a tax standpoint, the total state taxes in year one are about $23 million. Over 30-year period, present value to today's dollars with the 5% discount rate, that's about $588 million. The local taxes, the 5 county transit sales, county sales, and city taxes, adds up to about another $3.5 million. So your total taxes is about $26 million, $681 million present value in today's dollars. The admissions tax adds an incremental $5.8 million, generating a total taxes with the admissions of $32.2 million on an annual basis. Once again, if you looked at that over a 30-year time period, it's about $831 million in today's dollars. And that's a quick overview of the economic impact related to the new Metrodome and the Vikings operation. So if you have any questions, Chairman, I'd be happy to take some.
I'll start with Representative Biskin, who is...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions, so if I could follow up after this one. The first is to Mr. Terwilliger, welcome to the committee. I guess on slide 11 is where I believe it was. Interesting verbiage that I had not seen before, and I've been a member of the legislature for over a decade now and have served almost the entire time on committees that have oversight of MSFC. I am curious about the last word on that slide. As owner of public assets, commission has an obligation to explore the options related to the future use of the Metrodome site. It's always been my understanding, Mr. Terwilliger, that Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission looked at the current and future uses of the Metrodome itself. This is the first time I have ever seen the word site added after the Metrodome. And correct me, I've never looked at your enabling statute and legislation, but is that word site taken directly from there, Mr. Terwilliger?
Mr. Terwilliger?
I'm going to ask Mr. Lester to respond to that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Diskin, member of the committee, the legislation does not specifically say the word site, but the commission has taken as its role from the statute keeping and preserving professional football, professional baseball for Minnesota for the long term. And that, from the football question, not merely through the 2011 expiration of the use agreement terms, but also the next 30 years as well. So the reconstruction of a facility on that site, using everything you can from the existing facility, and in conjunction with the team who needs to be a full partner in this enterprise, we believe we can use the site and the incredible investment already made in the infrastructure in at and around the site to accomplish the mission that the statute gives the commission, as well as the commission sees as its own role.
Okay. Representative Diskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Lester. One other question, and this goes to Mr. Rota. Mr. Rota, as you put together your presentation, you glossed over a point, and I can't really see the comparison in here, so you may want to put me back to the appropriate slide, but I'm going to work off of slide 28 just for a starting point. Mr. Rota, you said in your testimony that you have made adjustments in a variety of factors, but I believe one of the adjustments you mentioned was that you did make adjustments for the fact that the spending that we're looking at is discretionary spending by families. Is it your testimony, Mr. Rota, that without the Metrodome on page 28, that the state would, but for the Metrodome, the state would lose $32 million a year in state tax revenue, that you have already adjusted for the fact that without a Metrodome, a family may go to a theater, or without the Metrodome, a family may go to a college football game? Are you saying that you've already made that adjustment and the $32 million is a hard number annually?
Mr. Rota, Chairman, Representative, we have made, as you mentioned before, we made a number of adjustments, and one of the final adjustments we made was to account for a level of display spending. One of the unique natures related to an NFL franchise is a large percentage of the revenue that comes in from the franchise comes from outside the metropolitan area, outside the state, the national TV deal, other revenue sharing that it has with the league. So when you take a look at the display spending, we assume that 30% of the local revenue generated, so that's tickets, concessions, merchandise, was displaced from the local economy. There's a couple other factors in there as well. A large percentage of the fans that come in to Viking games actually come from outside the state, with 98% of those fans coming for the sole purpose of the Viking games. So exactly what you said is the impacts that are represented in this document are incremental dollars to the state that do account for displacement.
Representative Diskin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The one thing that we don't see here is comparative studies with the current Metrodome, using the current Metrodome as it is today, because all a good share of these figures that we're seeing here are in existence today. They're not added on to, unless we're talking about some kind of a facility that would be in direct competition with the Target Center and the Excel Center, and we know the Target Center is struggling. There's lots here to chew on, and you know what the current budget situation is. We've got a 20% deficit out of our current budget. It's like telling somebody over their kitchen table, take 20% out of what you currently use to run your family and cut it out and then just do without. So, I mean, you know, it's just wonderful that we're looking at, we're just having a listening presentation. We're not voting on this, but you know, we've got to be cognizant of just what's happening with this national recession, the second one in 8 years. 44 states have a severe deficit. We have to recognize that, and it does impact everything that we think about and everything that we look at here and everything that we're deciding for the year. So if you're looking for input so that you can make your presentation better, you're going to be going to other committees, do a comparative study with the current Metrodome so that we can see what we're looking at here.
Mr. Chair, maybe could I respond to that? Representative, your comments are well taken. I think I attempted in my earlier comments to refer to the fact that we understand and certainly recognize the budget constraints that confront all of the states in the country, not only Minnesota, and as well as the country as a whole. However, you know, one of the things that we wanted to do, and I'm going to ask Bill to refer to your specific to your question, but one of the things we would like to just remind people that we do have, while at the same time all these problems going on, we do have other things that are occurring, such as the use agreement ending after 3 years. We need to be aware of that because that could very well govern exactly what our actions need to be here, and we need to be looking at that, and so ours is more of a reminder of that. So along with all these difficult situations we're looking at, we need to be looking at this as one of the many other things that you have to be aware of. And so it's not in any way, shape, or form meant to downplay the seriousness of the situation. But we do want everyone to understand that once we pass this these months pass by, that we do have increasingly more difficulties because of the increased costs and et cetera. So we just need to be aware of that. And I'd like to ask Bill Lester to respond also to your other
Mr. Lester.
Comments as well.
Mr. Chairman, a representative, of course, we all have subscriptions to the newspaper and are aware of the issues facing the state today. The charge to the commission has been, is there a way to retain this terrific asset? And the Metrodome, your predecessor, sat in these chairs 32 years ago and took a very tough vote on allowing the Metropolitan Council to sell bonds, which were paid for out of the revenues from the facility. It turned out to be a spectacular investment in terms of the public. So financially it did, as well as, and I'm not sure we could duplicate this going forward, although we surely would try, as well as having the team allows you to have the facility. Having the facility allows you to maximize its return for the rest of the state, and that includes the amateur baseball. We will be without a team, possibly, but we will be without a climate-controlled, large-capacity venue. And so when we come out of this, as we surely will, eventually this recession, we want to make sure that we continue to have a state that is a great place to live, that offers great opportunities for those types of large-capacity venues that the Metrodome has enabled us to have. And none of that, and we will, Representative, of course, Mr. Chairman, Representative, have the line-to-line comparison that you've requested. Thank you.
Representative Scalzi?
I know.
Okay. Representative Hornstein?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and either to Mr. Twiller or Mr. Lester. Is the use of the existing facility off the table? I understand that you use the word reconstruct in your presentation, but I haven't seen the word remodel. So is this I know the team doesn't like that option, but as far as you are concerned, is use of the existing facility still on the table?
Mr. Twilliger.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and Mr. Hornstein. We've looked long and hard at this. We have, the commission, prior to my being there, when I was still over here, the commission in 2001 had a remodel study that they put in. And since that time, we have looked at different matters of how we could, you know, use the current facility. Is there any other way to do that? And the conclusion was this last summer, we would invite firms to come in and talk about reconstruction. And in that charge, they were asked to, you know, use any or all or whatever parts of the current facility to make an NFL quality stadium. They have looked at it. They have gone through it. We don't have that report back before us here. But it is increasingly difficult to see how we could remodel a facility and make it a long-term solution for the Minnesota Vikings from a revenue standpoint, from a fan comfort standpoint. You know, I might just comment here also that all of us are aware of the numbers. And yet at the same time, when we look at trying to remodel it, redo it, it's very difficult to put into place what you have to have to meet the NFL standards and requirements. Just things such as security that took place really since 9/11 have increased the cost considerably and the needs. Bill has been with this facility since 1987 and well knows the various components of it, and I'd like to have him respond a little further if he could here.
It's not, Mr. Chairman, Representative, it's a very good question, and every day when you speak to groups, that's the question comes up again. It's not possible to replicate the current NFL program in terms of requirements for seating, premium seating, all of the elements that the NFL requires its resident teams to have. And the commission program, which means amateur baseball, soccer, concerts, truck tractor pulls, all of those elements within the existing. What we thought we could do before is try and blow out the walls, because it is clearly not up to modern standards for a large capacity venue in terms of the width of the concourse, the number of restrooms, especially for women, and all these other elements that are going to give us not only a short horizon solution, a 5 to 10 year, but a 30 to 40 year horizon solution to the issue.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Hornstein.
I have other questions, but in the interest of time, let me just ask one more, and that is it your intention to come to the legislature this year with a funding package? I mean, I share Representative Scalzi's concerns, and I think the majority of our colleagues, I think in this budget year, it would be a non-starter, but let me just ask you, is it your intention to come and during this session, this year even, calendar year, with a funding proposal to the Minnesota State Legislature? Your knowledge of the Vikings will do that in partnership with you.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Hornstein, the commission will come back with perhaps additional information. We will not have a bill. Now, that other people can certainly put a bill in. I mean, that's certainly their right, but the commission itself will be acting as a resource, serving as a resource for the various policymakers here, the leadership, to determine what that direction will be.
Then, Mr. Chair, based on your conversations, preliminary or otherwise, is it your sense that the Vikings are going to come to the state legislature with a bill this year?
Mr. Twilliger.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Hornstein, you know, I'd be hesitant to speak for the Vikings. Certainly they are concerned about the length of the year that they have left on their use agreement. They're concerned the stadium ranks 32 out of 32 stadiums in revenue generated. They rank 32nd, in other words. Since the mid-90s, all but four teams have either moved into either new or remodeled facilities, or will move into remodeled facilities or new facilities. The four exceptions are San Francisco 49ers, the Oakland Raiders, the San Diego Chargers, and the Minnesota Vikings. You can see from that that the revenue streams that are available to their competition become a real challenge to them to be able to continue to operate a franchise in a successful manner. And we're working with them, and we understand that difficulty. To speak for them, I'd be reluctant to do so, but they are faced with a considerable challenge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Beers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, the first question is operations. Second has to do with the way the Metrodome was built. But Senator Dwelliger, do I understand that the Sports Facilities Commission actually operates, covers all your operating costs out of rent and proceeds and so on from what you do at the Dome? There's no other subsidy that goes into it, is there?
Chair, Representative Beard. No, there is. Let me mention this very, very quickly. It is a debt-free facility. We have approximately $15 million in reserve. We have approximately $15 million operating budget on an annual basis. It receives no tax subsidies and it generates necessary revenues to continue to operate.
Is the anticipation that if you're involved in another facility that it would be more than just a for a football team, but it would continue to cover the rest of the things we do in the stadium? We'd also continue to cover its operating costs?
Mr. Chairman,
would it be structured that way?
Well, I'm going to ask Bill to respond also to this, but I should mention here that the facility is intended to provide a home for all the various activities that we currently have there, with the exception, of course, Major League Baseball have its own park. But we will be meeting those needs for the state. But Bill, you may want to get more specific.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, also the... Mr. Chairman, Representative...
Lester.
The users of the stadium essentially also pay for their use, obviously, and once the debt was retired, we still have to meet that roughly $14-15 million annual operating cost. Going forward, there would have to be a negotiation and with the team, who would have to pay its fair share. Those who benefit pay, the team would have to, and that would be a negotiated settlement. It would be operated by a commission, a separate commission, to ensure that the public's needs and voices are heard. And then all of, through the listening tour, we heard from high school coaches, small college coaches, who wanted to make sure that when you built something that wasn't going to price them out of the ability to use it from 8 in the morning till 2 in the morning, as we do now for this whole month of February and March. So that'll have to be a negotiation further down the line, but you're going to have to figure out a way that it's still affordable for those other users. But no Vikings, no facility. If that's not cash flow without the Vikings.
Last Representative Beard.
If you could clarify for us, on page 3 of your presentation, you talked about selling $55 million in bonds to build the stadium, and I believe they were paid off with a liquor tax that was levied just in Minneapolis, wasn't it? But then, back on page 10, you talk about the public investment in the Metrodome to date is only $33 million. Can you explain where you were going with that and what you mean there?
Mr. Beard, I will take a pass at it, and Bill can fill in additionally. When the bonds were initially sold, $55 million bonds were sold, to service the interest on those bonds, hospitality taxes in the city of Minneapolis, those hospitality taxes amounted to about $27 million before the facility was actually... required that much before the facility was actually up and operating and generating revenue on its own. In addition to that 27, that additional 6 is related to costs from the city of Minneapolis and relocation of streets and some other infrastructure. So that was the initial investment. There were bonds that were in place. Then those remaining bonds continued to be in place until such time as the Sports Commission in the late 90s sold the land that the old Met Ice Center sat on. When that was imploded, that land was sold, and those proceeds went on then to pay off the remaining bonds.
Representative Beard?
Well, just to thank you, Mr. Chair, just to probe it just a little further. So to be clear then, the hospitality tax that was levied in Minneapolis only paid the interest on the bonds for a short period of time, and then either that tax went away or was diverted to some other purpose. And the bonds were actually retired by the Sports Facilities Commission and using your own revenue streams from other things.
Mr. Lester. Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard. Correct, but it was levied in the city of Minneapolis for the first 2 years to 79 until the legislature changed the appointing authority. Once it was cited in Minneapolis, the appointing authority switched from the really statewide, there were a couple of outstate members also appointed, to the city of Minneapolis, since they were responsible for police, fire, and all of those other elements that the city is responsible for. So then the hospitality tax, which had started off as a 7-county-wide hospitality tax, also followed suit and was levied only in the city of Minneapolis. Okay.
Thank you. That, I think there's been some misinformation around that. I just want to clear that up.
And Mr. Lester, if I can ask, so you're saying that the hospitality tax is no longer on, and we do hear that as a rumor from time to time. There no longer is a hospitality tax. It's the Metrodome is self-supporting.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the hospitality tax is no longer put in for that purpose. We no longer do it. They used it for other things, convention centers, some other things like that, but it was retired. It's no longer used for the Metrodome since 1984, actually.
Representative Beard,
thank you. We levied the tax, and I think others found it hard to ask us to take it off once it had accomplished its purpose. It found other things to do.
Yeah. Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to pick up, I think, where Representative Scalzi started our discussion, and that is the budget facing the state. During a session, I was called out to meet with the superintendent and a school board member of one of my school districts, North Branch Public Schools, that is the lowest funded district in the state in aggregate funding for, I think, 6 of the last 7 years. They now are sharing principals between school buildings. And having cut to the bone, they're now going to cut bone. And one of the questions that I asked them as they face a $1.5 million shortfall again for the next year is what's left. And they're considering cutting sports for the middle school at a savings of $60,000 to $80,000. What happens if you cut sports at the high school? All sports. Because as you know, under Title IX, you offer one, you got to offer the equal opportunity. I don't even think that they wanted to ask that question, but the reality is that the full scope of the budget deficit that we are facing here is that we will have school districts considering losing that Friday night lights and a homecoming tradition. There may not be teams playing tournaments to get to the Metrodome or the Metrodome Next. It troubles me. My great grandfather was the quarterback of the first Little Brown Jug football team, I think that some of my colleagues have heard me say that phrase probably a few hundred times. Because I'm intensely proud of our tradition, but even Sid Hartman has said that the purpose of and I'm sure that Sid's going to correct me if I'm wrong in his next column, but I remember hearing him twice on the radio saying the purpose of building a new facility is more money for the owners, with the second phase of that being to put a better team on the field. But, Mr. Lester, you said the team needs to be a full partner in this enterprise. What does that mean for the team to be a full partner in this enterprise?
Mr. Lester.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, all your points are very good points, obviously. But a full partner means that if we don't have the team and if we don't have a facility in which to house that team, we're not going to get at these ancillary benefits. We will get through this too shall pass. We will, and I wouldn't trade places with anyone sitting at that table. It's a murderous task that you face. But nonetheless, we're going to get through that task, and we want to have it the same legacy you have with your grandfather. We want to have the 9-man football team from outstate Minnesota who bring grandma and grandpa in to watch them play football. We want them to have the same kind of memories. We want our grandkids to have the same kind of memories. So what I hopefully as a state we're going to be able to figure out a way to accomplish the things that you absolutely have to, because there's no question, there's no comparison between what we're talking about and the education of those North France kids. But also have a place that we're really proud to live, that has quality life, that has these opportunities for people other than the professional team staff. That is our focus. That's what we've tried to do with this facility.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that we're going to have to make some, even if we were to raise every possible tax that doesn't drag the economy to a halt, and we had a different governor, and we, even if revenue was on the table, we're still going to have to make $3 or $4 billion worth of cuts. I mean, murderous. We're going to have to be able to sleep at night, and we're going to have to be able to not only recognize the Minnesota that comes out of this, we're going to have to do this in a Minnesota way that represents shared sacrifice. You know, when we're looking at $954 million of a project, I think I have that number right? And we're talking about $734 million of spending in the state. I mean, on the green jobs and energy efficiency side, you give me $954 million, I can certainly beat that 13,000 job number. I can certainly beat the 734. I could probably provide $2, $3, $4 billion of benefit to the state. Because I guess we'd be looking at what's the, we just can't go down this business as usual road. I strongly urge you to consider looking at a 5-year extension of using the existing Metrodome. I mean, I could, Mr. Chair, I could look at a lot of numbers here, and I think that I know that I'm not the only one in this committee that has questions about this. The question that I have for Mr. Rota is, I'm just curious about the stamp that's at the top of the report that says confidential draft for discussion purposes only. What are we supposed to do with this as legislators?
I'm going to let Mr. Lester tell you exactly what the draft stamp's on there.
I've been told I'm supposed to eat it, which I am hungry. But.
If you could just keep it under your hat for a couple of days. No, Mr. Chairman.
It's just my style, Mr. Lester.
The draft is on there because the Sports Facilities Commission did not officially adopt it. Obviously, the members support it, and so in recognition that it is not officially a document of the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission, we continue to stamp that on there. But of course, it's a public document. We produced it.
And this is the remodeling report that you talked about, Mr. Lester, earlier in your testimony? Or?
Mr. Chairman, this is Metrodome Next. This is the analysis of the art of the possible on this site.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Any more questions? Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And let me just say at the outset I want to commend the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission for your stewardship of this asset for all these years. As you indicated, there is no state money in this project, and it is self-supporting. It is a tremendous asset for the state of Minnesota. And what you're charged with doing is protecting that asset. And obviously there's not much of an appetite among our colleagues for a major spending here on a new stadium or a reconstructed stadium, given our budget situation. But we need to be looking at this also. How do we protect this asset? And if the Vikings go away, which is very likely going to happen, if the new stadium, reconstructed stadium, doesn't happen, what are we going to do with this asset? To keep it going, as you've heard, it's $15 million a year just to keep it operating. Where is that going to come from? If it's going to be torn down, who's going to pay for that? What's the site, the potential uses of the site? So I would caution us to not just say, no, we're not in the mood for a stadium reconstruction, but we ought to be talking with the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission about what can we do to protect this asset, this tremendous asset that has served the state of Minnesota well for the last 27 years or thereabouts. So I would hope, and maybe you want to comment some more about what are the options in terms of protecting this asset if the team does in fact leave.
Mr. Lester, Mr. Twilliger,
Mr. Lester. Members, that you've raised that question during the listening tour when we were up in your way, and it's a very good question. The Metrodome doesn't cash flow without the roughly $6.5 million, $6.5 to $7.5 million from the Vikings each year. So there would be a $6 to $8 million annual shortfall to keep it going. Given the reserves, we could probably limp along for a year or so, but it will, if it's not cash flow, it will not function without the Vikings there. As far as reuse, the commission still takes as its goal to figure out a way to get the team to go along with a long-term use agreement that solves this issue for the next generation and a half, as we were able to do with this one. But it is, you make an extremely good point. We've invested a lot of time and sweat and tears, not to mention money, as have the people of this state and the users of that facility. So protecting that asset and ensuring that there's an ongoing gift to the state or payback to the state is really a crucial goal for this commission.
Williger?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just might add to that that, you know, this is not an easy thing to try to think through as to what the solution is. Bill already mentioned that the Vikings are key to retaining this. The Vikings have 3 years. We ultimately have to get to the question of, you know, is that what we want? Do we want to have to put ourselves in a position on down the road of attempting to find another NFL franchise? And I don't think we do. I think the Vikings are part of the fabric in this state. The Twins are part of the fabric of this state. There are a lot of things like that. At the very same time we're talking about that, we recognize that there are some economic pressures that they are going to have on them. I'm talking about the Vikings. So our job, I look at it, is to attempt to work with them to try to, we'd love to say, can you extend the use agreement, you know, would you be willing to do that? At the same time, they have pressure from the other teams in the league that are, frankly, through revenue sharing, giving Minnesota Vikings assistance in this. They have that type of pressure. And how do we deal with that? Because at some point, the question gets out of the commission's hands, gets out of the Vikings' hands in many ways. So to try and avoid that, to try and find that long-term solution, I think it's worth all of us sitting down and looking at it. Trying to find a way to finance this that doesn't take away from North Branch schools, that doesn't take away from books in the classroom and, you know, class sizes and health care and those things, that really puts the cost of a facility more on those who go there, who play there, who benefit from the team being there, type of a basis. That's what we're about. Your help, your assistance, your guidance and direction would be very much appreciated. It is not an easy investment to oversee when you start looking at what the long-term prospects are under the current situation. And I must commend the Vikings. All the times that we are around their those people, their ownership, etc., we have not heard them threatening. They've not said to us, we're going to pick up and move. There have not been threats. That has not been similar to other situations in the past, but the Vikings have not made that threat. But the decision may be out of their hands with the other NFL owners who may say, 28 of us in the last 15 years have done something for our facility, our communities have. Why is it right for us to continue to subsidize you? And so that becomes the dilemma we're in. So, you know, we wanted to come over here today to acquaint you with the facts here, to remind you that we're looking, trying to find the solution. But you have to be aware there is a time factor involved here, and it's going to be necessary for us to continue to have discussions like this that are somewhat painful and uncomfortable. You find it painful to think about it. We find it painful to perhaps sit here and be talking about where it's at, because we certainly, and having been on your side of the table, certainly recognize the needs that are out there and such. But at the same time, we have a job to do, and we would like to maintain a quality of life in Minnesota. And I believe we'd like to maintain it in a way that's well-rounded with such things as professional sports teams.
Representative Kelsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you have done a good job in this presentation, and I share what Representative Lanning is talking about when we're trying to make sure that the Metrodome or the site, however we term it in the future. But when you talk about painful, I don't think you have any idea what we're going to, and it's not only this year, because I've been told that 2010 is the last large graduating class. And we know that in 2020, there will be as many people who are over 65 as will be at that time in K-12 schools. So our youthful population is declining, and our aging population is escalating. They're going to cross at 2020. And life is going to be quite different, because our schools are experiencing declining enrollment right now, and this is what's giving us a lot of the problems that we're facing. But when you're looking at your numbers and when you're reconstructing and going to other committees, you have to be cognizant of the fact that most of the members here on the local government committee and the next one you're going to go to have been involved in local government. And we don't plan just for the next year or the 2 years or 5 years. We plan for 20 years out. And in 20 years out, we're going to see a very different Minnesota, simply because of the aging of the population and the needs that that aging population brings to us. I serve on the Health Care and Human Services Committee as well. And we have massive problems there trying to help our disabled and our vulnerable elderly populations live a good quality of life. So when we talk about the Minnesota quality of life, there's many things we're looking at in the next 20 years. And I don't think that you can disregard the demographics of what's going on here. And I think it's one thing you should keep in mind. And as you look towards your next committee, I think you should take that into account as well, because we certainly do here at the legislature, and it's an inescapable fact that we're an aging population with greater needs.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, Representative Kelsey and I are on the same page here, that it's because I think we both live along the rush line, and we're connected by our transit corridor we want built. It's a public good and infrastructure that needs to get put online. But back to the issue at hand, you know, 2018 did indeed get investment, and I think almost all, if not all, get public investment to build their stadiums. But we're living in a world that where business as usual doesn't cut it anymore. The world has drastically changed, and I say that because I think we have to really address the hard problems that we've been continually, I guess today's metaphor is kicking the can down the road, and we're not going to do that anymore. But what I'm concerned about is those 28 who have gotten the benefit, who are actually writing the rules. I think, Mr. Lester, you described that the Metrodome doesn't comply with the facility rules that the NFL owners have set up. It's 32 NFL owners that have set up the rules that now then squeeze the Metrodome out, saying, oh, we need a new stadium, we're not complying with those rules. Our responsibility here is to respond to the 5 million citizens of the state of Minnesota, and as much as I love seeing Adrian Peterson, in the room here today, he looks different than I thought he would, but and I love watching Adrian Peterson, with his incredible moves on Sunday, and I live and die by the success of the team. But at the same time, I don't think the state can live and die by the success of the 32 owners in the NFL. I think we have to look at our more core obligations.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you. Just very quickly, Mr. Chair.
And we need to get this wrapped up.
Yeah, I understand. And, you know, we've been through the Twin Stadium fight, and, you know, St. Louis was able to build a new Cardinal Stadium with the majority private funding. It's my understanding that the New England Patriots built a stadium with majority private funding, and that the Indianapolis Colts rehabilitated the RCA Dome. I don't know what it's called, something different now, but seems like there's some options of using private money and rehabbing dome stadiums that have taken place in other cities, and I think those need to be on the table here. Otherwise, I'll just repeat what I said before. To come with a two-thirds publicly funded proposal for a brand-new stadium here this session would appear to be a non-starter, so I we got to look at some of these other private funding options and rehab options, I think, if there's to be a real constructive dialogue here.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Twilliger.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Certainly not going to try and refute everything you say. We do have to look at all these various options, and we've been attempting to do that. I might mention here, of the 30 of the various stadiums that have been constructed over these years, they've gone, there are a couple of them. New England, you mentioned, is one that's largely private funding. However, Indianapolis is not one of them. Indianapolis is a new facility, and it's nearly all public monies in there. Just for the record,
but
the average, if you take all of them that are out there, they're all over the lot, but it's about 38% private and the rest public on an average. Of course, averages are averages, so you know each one's different, but that is kind of roughly where it's at.
Mr. Lester?
Mr. Chair, members, I just want to, one other thing, we're competing with them. We're in the global marketplace, as everybody knows, across the board, so we're competing with them. So a few months ago, we competed to host another Final Four. We've had two of them, and we're competing against these the latest and the greatest, and it's very difficult. And so we didn't get it. We're not in the mix. We're not in the mix for Final Fours between 2012 and 2016. It's probably one of the first casualties out of the gate of where we're seeing the impact of the national market and the influx of public money, along with private money, where it's costing us, it's costing Minnesota, if we want to continue to host the world-class events. I just want to make that point. Thank you.
Mr. Twilley.
Mr. Chair, if I could just make one final comment, which would just be simply to express our appreciation for the opportunity to come tell people about what is happening there in an overview fashion, to try to respond to your questions, and certainly let you know that we would be most pleased to visit with you at any time to try and respond to questions or to take, more importantly, perhaps your suggestions as to how we can proceed. So thank you very much for your courtesy today.
Well, and thank you for coming, for presenting the report and giving us something to chew on, and thanks again for coming here. And Representative Cerner, do you have the minutes?
I do have the minutes in front of me, Chair Nelson, and I reviewed them, and I would make a motion to move the minutes.
Any questions of the minutes or questions? All in favor of accepting the minutes? Say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Any further questions? Otherwise, we're adjourned.